in liberating strife. Oh, more than self, their country loved. Have mercy.
Well, welcome to the roundtable for October 24th. Having all kinds of fun with technology today. So we're going to talk strip maps tonight, a little land navigation, probably talk some drones. Got a full plate, so going to be a pretty packed hour. I don't know if people have been watching the news cycle, but if you watch MSNBC, those people are fucking crazy. They've lost their goddamn minds. Listening to just the sheer volume of bullshit that they are literally pushing out. It's all gaslighting horseshit. Trump's a Nazi. He's a racist. My God. Every trope they can think of. Every adjective to describe what they want to do, they're doing, they're using, they're saying. It's like, wow. I was sent a bunch of videos of Joe Scarborough and whatever that tart's name that sits next to him that thinks she's God's gift to journalism when she's really just as dumb as a sack of fucking rusty hammers. That was a montage of stupid, wrapped with ignorant and punctuated with complete lunacy. Unbelievable. Just the amount of stupidity that is. What even kills me the most is all the pundits around them at MSNBC are pushing this shit like people are listening. It's amazing to me. But I went tangential. Sorry. I don't care what her name is. Micah, Milka, well, I don't give a shit what her name is. Goo Gobbler. She's fucking communist Goo Gobbler. I don't care what her fucking name is. She's not a journalist. She's an activist. Anyway, my point of saying all this is the narratives have changed. And I said this in my Substack update today. When you do influencing operations, you do influencing all the way through action. And here's a case in point that I used this morning. In Fallujah, before we went into Fallujah, it was months of messaging prior to going in there. Hey, if you have a family, if you have a house, this is a good time to evacuate because we're going to come in and we're going to clean out all the insurgents. Hey, if you've got a house and your house gets damaged, we'll help you, we'll help you get paid out for your house and your damages so you can repair your residence. And if you have kids, you want to move out of the area. Here's where the temporary shelters are. Here's where the camps are. And for months, all the way up to literally when we crossed the LD, we were messaging the entire country saying, this is what we're going to do. And then, of course, you know, once we went in, the messaging changed. I'm seeing the narrative change in multiple places. Because if you go back to July and August and early September, you had Clinton coming out saying there's going to be a black swan, there's going to be a black swan, there's going to be a black swan, there's going to be some major event, there's going to be some kind of an attack. I mean, she just went on and on and on and on. And all of the liberals did the same thing, right? The one thing they're good at is pounding the narrative into the ground. And they've switched narratives now to where Trump's a Nazi, Trump's going to arrest everybody, Trump's going to roll them up, and they all seem unhinged. And the truth of the matter is, let's say 10% of that's true. You would be shitting your pants, too, if you saw the real poll numbers, and you knew that a good 3/4 of the American population wanted to throw you into prison to make sure you hang from a fucking rope. You would lose your mind, too. And that could be what we're seeing, but I don't think that's what we're seeing. I think we're seeing the lull and the change in messaging because they haven't decided which line of operation they're going to use. And more importantly, they haven't decided which of the lines of operation is going to be most effective. At the same time that's going on, you're seeing all the BRICS movement, you're seeing all of the movement towards backing currency with gold and with precious metals, and you're seeing all of the ripple effects of that on the U.S. economy. At the same time that's going on, you have Ukraine, which Ukraine is starting to crumble, and I read something today in Zero Hedge that there's record number of desertions, 51,000 to be exact. That's a staggering amount of troops that are leaving the front lines. Can't sustain any kind of an offensive or defensive operation if you're losing that kind of numbers. And if that's out of 550,000, that's 10% right there off the top. And it's estimated they're fielding between 200,000 to 300,000 troops right now. So it's even more than 10%. So it's a significant amount of troops that they're losing. And then I heard something this morning about, you know, them talking about a peace deal with Putin. So that to me says that the line of operations haven't been chosen yet. And most importantly, there's all these lines of operations going on. And the other thing I want to remind everybody of, if you haven't done your preps yet, if you haven't prepped on food, now's the time to buy it. Because they're culling populations of cows right now as we speak, and beef prices are going to double and triple in the next few months while all this is going on. So, like I said, there's lots going on today. Let me bring the guys on real quick and we'll get going. Gentlemen, thanks for jumping on.
Wow. Glad to be here.
Sorry, it's blowing my nose. I didn't want everybody to hear the fact my allergies are kicking my ass right now, which I'm still in denial I have them in the first place. So, you want to talk
to me both, man.
You want to talk strip maps? Troop sent me a couple of pictures. Couldn't get the video to work, which is typical for any of these roundtables. Let me pull that up. Let me know when you can see it, Troop. It's doing its thing. That's the one thing about using this platform. You never know what it's going to do. But anyway, so we're going to talk strip maps. You want to talk drones first? Let's do drones first. Let's while I'm trying to unfuck the technology, why don't we talk drones?
What kind of angle do you want to talk about on drones?
Just pick one.
You want to that, Bruce, or you want to jump into it?
Well, I would just say, I could say a little bit. I mean, I think it's obvious to anyone who's been paying attention into Ukraine and what's been going on there with both sides, you know, incredible evolution of the new way of war with drones. And, you know, I'm remiss at this myself, even though I'm a pilot. I kind of don't like drones. I'm like, no, I want to fly airplanes. But I think that it would probably behoove all of us to have a decent drone. I bought a really cheap drone for my son to play with, to learn on, in hopes that we would maybe get him interested in it so that I could get a better one. But I think as a minimum, you know, we should probably all be trying to get a fairly decent quality drone that can do reconnaissance, if nothing else. And then from there on, the sky's the limit as far as building like FPV drones that could be used in defensive and offensive means. And it's amazing that, you know, even on Amazon or wherever, you can find drones that can carry things and drop things and everything. So there's clearly a lot of capability out there that's not all that expensive when you consider the capability it provides. But that's kind of all of my thoughts. I mean, Trooper, I bet you have more ideas.
I want to give a couple of shout outs. First of all, my friend Sean Tex, I've known him for probably 25 years now, 30 maybe. And he was like, literally, he's one of those guys that should be the multi-billionaire patent holder. He was the first dude that I ever met. And I work in a military industrial type of industry. He was the first guy that I met that built his own drone, first person viewable. That means that you have a screen and you're looking at the screen controlling the drone, and it's got a connection to the camera on the drone. And he, by hand, in his garage with parts, and we took it dove hunting with us. And the idea was that we're going to fly the drone around and just figure out where the doves were. And we found that it flushed up the dove. So it worked just as well for that. But this was 20 years ago. No, well, let's see, about 15 years ago that he did this. And we already had, like, you know, MQ-9 Reaper drones, big commercial military drones at the time. But the first dude that made one in his garage. So it shouldn't be a surprise that this is, you know, that we're here now. And I think that the military operation between the Ukrainians and the Russians are just kind of a proof of concept, just like Desert Storm was a proof of concept for a lot of the military hardware that we had. It had not been proven. We were aging out our Vietnam War stuff, our Korean War era stuff. We had all this new shit, and then it performed pretty well. And now, you know, now the model's changed again. But as far as the drones go, I will probably not get one because I have so much other shit. But talking to Michael, who's one of our admins, Patriot Berserker, he has a nice commercial drone. It's like a $10,000 drone. You don't need to get that. You can get the $200 drone. In the scope of strip maps and in the scope of your own personal safety, if you're navigating either your own neighborhood or an unfamiliar area, you want to, and you always hear us say this, stay out of the conflict space. But stay out of the conflict space also means avoid avoidable gunfights. Don't stick your face around the corner and then figure out if bullets are flying the other way. So just the little tiny drones, the little cheapo ones that you probably bought like for your son, those are great for flying over to the next street or over to the next row of houses or around whatever obstacle or barrier. But just try to figure out what's going on. And they're very inexpensive now, and you just upgrade a little bit, and they include almost by default either IR, what, you know, is like traditional night vision, right? Or thermal, and either one of those are good things. So if you're on foot, these are very small form things. You could pack them, and they can help you avoid getting killed, and they can also help you if you're off, you know, out of the city and you're trying to navigate. A perfect example would be up in Appalachia, where you got all these trees, they're fallen. There's, you know, two or three different ways that you could go on a topo map. Should I go through the valley? Should I go over, you know, over the hill? Should I go between the saddles? You could take a drone out and you could look at your options and they go, oh, there's a big tree there. Oh, nope, that whole side of that cliff's gone now. That's not even on the map. So these are really important things that if you want to invest in them, or at least have one person in your group, what I would recommend, because you've heard it on like this show, I, you know, use your shit, but I don't want people to just keep buying shit, you know, just you understand the stuff you have, but have one person in your group that can do this. And the more sophisticated you are, that, you know, as you start to plus up and build a team, it seems to me like everybody wants to be an operator. I was like blowing up Steve's phone the other day. I'm so pissed off about putting all the work in, like for the video, the videos on water and these really important things. And then I get a response to a water video that says, what kind of mount, what kind of flashlight mount should I put on my AR-15? You know, I want to pull my fucking hair out. But if you got grandpa or Uncle Leroy or your wife or your, you know, your son or daughter or somebody like that who you don't want on the ground, or they're not capable of you know, being part of the armed contingent of your group, they can fly the drone. They can relay communications. And if you have a small team on the ground and you have somebody in a vehicle, or they're behind cover, or they're, you know, to the rear of you, and they got that drone moving around, they can say, hey, you know, behind the blue building, there's like a red car. Don't, you know, don't go that way. Go left, go right, back up, retreat, whatever. So you already have that asset in the sky. And if somebody sees that asset in the sky and they start shooting at it, they're probably not going to hit it. But even if they do, at least you know where the gunfire is, and you know that there's armed, pissed off people before they see you. So I could just see a lot of different advantages to having a small drone just in your kit, if that's something that you have room for in your vehicle. And that wasn't part of this discussion. I just was talking to Michael like just before the show, and he said, hey, you know, you should bring that up. And then you should bring up just simple stuff like having a 12 volt tire pump, and, you know, like the, those plugs you can put in your tire, you know, and stuff like that for your vehicle. But I don't want to turn this into how to outfit your vehicle, but definitely there's a place.
Why not? Full send. Go for it. Full send. Let's go off on a tangent. We never do
right. that. We never do that. But yeah, so there, you know, there's a place for that, right? There's definitely a place for drones. We should probably have a whole separate conversation on that for people that have active, you know, field experience using them. But those are the use cases that I could definitely see.
Well, I thought of one that you kind of didn't mention, but you went over it sort of fast, and it fits right in with your whole focus on water. And I think one of the probably more useful things for a drone for everyone, believe it or not, that'll come in handy all the time, will be helping you find food, helping you find animals to hunt, you know, because like in Colorado, like elk herds are amazingly, you know, in Indian, the word for elk is wapiti, and it literally means like ghosts of the woods, because they, these 800 pound animals in herds, which I'm about to start hunting this weekend, they move through the woods like ghosts, and it's amazing how heavy they are. And a whole herd can, you know, there may be 200 elk within your county, or probably much more, but they move around constantly every day, and trying to find them is almost like a needle in a haystack. And having a drone, you know, wherever you live, could be the difference between getting food and not, if you can find where the deer are or whatever. And I think that will probably be something you'll use a drone for even more than self-defense, most likely. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, that was the other point of that too, is, you know, all of us have guns and the optimal flashlight mount for our AR. You're going to run out of reasons to waste your money on shit you don't need. Being, you know, at that point, a drone is not a bad investment. If you just got, I don't know how much was the one you bought your son? Like, you know, you get $300-$500 burning a hole in your pocket.
Oh, not a like bad $50. But it was $50, but even at that, it could still take pictures and do everything. I mean, it's just, we kept crashing it, but you know, it was a start.
Yeah. That seems like a good proof of concept investment for sure. And you can, I mean, you know, and let's go down the other, tangent of what you can do with those drones. It was like 10 years ago that guy strapped a Glock to a drone and he was shooting targets with it, and it just freaked out the left. They're like, they wanted to pass legislation based on this one YouTube video of this guy just fucking around in his backyard. I thought it was brilliant. But like I said, the drone discussion, though, that definitely has changed the engagement tools that people have available to them. But just from the perspective of you're on the ground or in a vehicle, you're trying to navigate through. And as we get into strip maps, we're going to talk about this. I have what are called green line, red line, blue line on my strip maps, and I'll push out two street lights in every direction. So wherever you live, there's a main road, and that main road has street lights on it. And then there's another main road. Usually they're an eighth or a quarter mile apart, like in a city. If you live in a rural area, you know, just whatever the main roads are. And one of the things that I have on my strip maps are, where are the bridges? And you, sometimes you drive over bridges, you don't even know you're driving over a bridge. And it might only be like a couple of, you know, like 3 foot diameter culvert tubes that are going underneath it, but it's in a dry wash and that can fail, right? Those things can break. There's low spots. You know, like Steve, when, you know, we go over into your compound, you got like two spots that get so much water over the road that they have signs that say, don't drive, you know, when this thing's flooded. So you're like, all right, well, if I got an evac and I'm in a torrential rainstorm, I automatically know I'm not going to go that route. So those are just things that you need to put on your map, or pedestrian bridges that are adjacent to roadways. So the home I just moved from, I had two different places where I could drive a vehicle over a pretty significant bridge, and adjacent to one of those was a little trail that went off, and then there was just a small pedestrian bridge, and you could drive like a motorcycle across it if you wanted to. So these are just some shots that I captured this morning. If everybody can see the videos that, or the images that Steve put up. So I'll just start up in the upper left. You see my compass. That's Asunto. I don't know if that's my global tour or whatever it is. Get a good compass. Don't get a shit compass. If you're going to get a Lensetic compass, get the actual Comenja. You don't have to get the Tritium one, but, you know, get a Comenja. Learn why you would need a military Lensetic compass. I'll be honest with you, and I have a whole video on compasses on my Trooper channel. If one of the people listening can go like search compasses on my Trooper channel and then link that, that'd be great. But a compass and a map only work if you're outside of a city, or if you're in a city you're not familiar with. So what I mean by that is, if you're going to work every day and you already know you head west down this road and you hang a right and head north or south to go to work or whatever, a compass is not a necessary part of your kit if you don't plan on leaving the city. A compass is an essential part of your kit if you live out in the boondocks and you think that you might have to navigate open terrain to maybe get to the next town over, you know, through the backwoods, through the trails or whatever. So on top there, there's a compass. And on that map, I think it got cut off, but also on that map, there are little squares, and the squares are parts of the neighborhood that have different people. And you'll see like MURS for that's one of the, like you have GMRS and FRS radio frequencies. You have MURS, which is the new, kind of higher power civilian radio service. You could buy radios for commercial radio bands. And so on that map, it was a strip map for my neighborhood where I know other like-minded people, and then they have people in their group, and the squares are boundaries of control. And a boundary of control means that even in, like, say, a large HOA where you got 5,000 houses, you might, you know, you have all these like internal capillary roads, and people will know the neighbor 9 houses down in one direction and the neighbor that's 2 streets over in the other direction. And so those guys will set up radio nets and they will be on specific frequencies. But then you go like a half a mile in the other direction of the, you know, in another HOA or another section of it, and you'll have the same thing. You'll have a cluster of like 8 or 9 neighbors, or even just 2 or 3 neighbors that know each other, and they're all on FRS frequency, channel 8, you know, privacy line code 100 or whatever. So you put that on your strip map. You understand who's in there, what the area of control is, who to have comms with. and then there's amateur radio people and whatever, right? So what you're doing on that, what I have on that strip map there with the compass is information that tells me about relevant things in that particular area. Just to the right of it, you see a 5x8 index card. And I love, or is it 4x6 or 5x8, whatever it is, 4x6 index card. And that is inside a bag, like a sandwich bag. So I can write on it with either a grease pencil, what we call China markers, or in that, this case, a Sharpie. And that's a great thing to have in your map kit because it has lines on it. It's already waterproof. And you can write, you know, go left, you know, go go to this street, make a right, go down a quarter mile. You'll see a broken, you'll see a Chevron gas station, or you'll see a broken tree, or you'll see a dead hobo, whatever. And you can put visual landmarks as well as street names on your route map for getting in and getting out of unfamiliar areas. So you can erase it when you're done. I also use that to copy down or transcribe coordinates, mainly if I'm trying to do what's called a reverse, what's it called? The reverse, when you shoot a lensitic,
reverse azimuth.
Reverse azimuth, thank you, to triangulate my position. And so basically what that means is you orient your map and then you'll shoot to like a hilltop and it's 273 degrees, you know, one direction, and you'll shoot to some other conspicuous thing on the map and it's 142 degrees in another direction. And then you intersect those on the map, and then where those lines cross is where you're at. So when you're writing down all those grid coordinates, or you're writing at altitude changes because you're doing long range shooting or whatever, it's nice to just, I carry a notepad, a write in the rain notepad, but it's nice to just ink stuff down and then be able to erase it really fast. So that little 4x6 index card has some alcohol wipes in the back of it. It has a small China marker, you know, a grease pen in case it's raining. And then it also has a Sharpie marker. Below that, in the lower right, you're seeing the same map in two different representations. You're seeing an aerial visual map on the bottom, and then you're seeing the road map on top. And that's, and all four of these are in fold-up map books that come out. I use them for different things. So the purpose of that is I'm traveling, and I think that one was for Las Vegas, I'm not sure, but you're traveling down a main highway. And I have a primary and a secondary route to in and out of my objective. I have an understanding of what exits are off of that freeway, and I want to know what is off of those exits. Some of them dead end directly into industrial complexes. Some of them go into really shitty parts of town. Some of them are going to give me a side street to get onto another freeway if I have to loop around for traffic, or if the, you know, a bridge is out or whatever. So the aerial map that's right next to it is providing that intelligence for me. So as I'm going down that road, I can see the buildings and the things that are on either side of the freeway because I'm in an elevated position and I don't see a lot of that stuff. That's going to help me point out resources. At night, it's really useful because it can help you point out landmarks, and it will help you navigate if you have to get off that main roadway. And you do have to go through these, you know, these streets and capillaries of the city or place that you've never been to before. It's going to give you a better idea to avoid the worst possible thing that could happen to you, which is you end up in a dead end somewhere, and then you're fucked because now you don't have an egress, you don't have an escape point. The map book that is in the lower left, and you see it's a close up or a more zoomed aerial map. And that is a protest map. So I think that one has, I don't remember if that was a county board of supervisors or if it was MTEC or what it was, but we were operating down there. And the thing that you have to worry about is Antifa. You have to worry about corralling by the police. You have to worry about mass shooters. You have to worry about a bunch of shit. So that map gives you a very, very close up bird's eye view of exactly where you're at. And you can see it's a lot closer than the freeway map to just to the right of it, you know, where you just kind of need a general idea of road surfaces. So that one on the lower left, I see rooftops, I see parking garages, I see open fields, I see places where I could run in between two buildings and get one street over and evade a violent confrontation. You know, you could also use that map for other purposes if you you know, if we were in like a clandestine type of, you know, an asymmetric mission focus, you would use maps like that for different types of planning. But I just took this picture because these are literally maps that I use. And Steve said, we're doing this thing today. And I went, oh shit. Okay. Let me pull them out real fast. Just take a picture. Now the slide that he cut into over that, you see those two bags on the ground, or, you know, that's actually the carpet. The black camouflaged and tan things are those map cases that you're looking at that are blown up on the left side. And then the two bags there, one of them contains all of my maps. I have GIS maps, topo maps, strip maps, relief maps, maps for different parts of the state, maps for different parts of the country that I normally travel to. And I'll reload those foldable map books that are on top on that green laundry bag there with whatever the particular mission profile or the location or what type of intelligence that I need when I get to that area. And every single one of those little map cases have the same shit in them. They have a compass, they have a ballpoint pen, they have a grease pencil, they have a right in the rain, they have a protractor, they have alcohol pads, they have relevant information that I'm going to need when I get to where I'm going. And then also they're some of them are USGS, some of them are MGRS, the different types of mapping. And the compasses are different because I'll use a different type of compass if I'm doing like land nav, dead reckoning, and I'm shooting azimuths, and I'll use like more of that Tsunto one that you see up there. If I'm just using general map orientation on like a Rand McNally or a normal road map, you need a less sophisticated compass that just gives you very reliable headings. And so the two bags below there, the other one is the bag that I have that it has like a bunch of shit in there for teaching land nav courses. And that's more geared towards, you know, out in the woods, you know, like true map and compass reading. Has chem lights, it has some reflective tape, that, you know, things where I can establish waypoints and markers. It has a range finder in it. And it has some other stuff. I have a video on that on my Trooper channel. I go through both those bags, and I go through this in quite a bit of detail. But just at a high level, these are examples of different types of maps that you would use for different purposes. And the most important one is the strip map that is going to give you a very crisp understanding of where your home is, what is around it, and what are the primary, secondary, and alternate routes that not only you would exit your neighborhood, but you would also be able to radio to somebody to get into your neighborhood, because they're not familiar. Say, hey, you're going to go, you know, to this road, you're going to make a left. And I know it seems weird, but you're going to go through this gate by the dumpster. Do you see the dumpster? Okay, go to the dumpster, go to the right of it, drive down the road, make a left. You're going to, okay, now you're going to come out in a cul-de-sac, you know, whatever. So this is important information, not just for you, but for people that you communicate with. And you can also just make copies of this shit and send it to, you know, send it to people if you're all going to meet or converge on an area, or, you know, you're setting up hide locations, you're setting up observation points, you're setting up signaling. There's a series I haven't started yet that's clandestine signaling and communication. And I think I'm probably going to get with Chris and Joe, or just have Chris and Joe do that, because it's more of the espionage, clandestine type of stuff that they're, you know, that they're known for. They have a lot of practical training in. So either way, I'm just gonna hand it off with that. But this is my personal shit. This is what I use it for. And this is a really important subject. So at the highest level, just go to Google Maps, take a picture of your neighborhood and understand how to get into it, how to get out of it. If there's huge fucking trees that are like leaning 20 degrees over the road, and there's a big windstorm and the power goes out, and then you get an evacuation order, chances are that big tree leaning over the road's what blew over and took your power out. You don't want to try to leave the neighborhood in that direction. It's just having that type of understanding of your neighborhood before you leave your house.
And a couple other things is everybody should have a good street map set up for their, if you're in a city, you should have you get one of the map books that has all the streets in it and drills down into the different streets. You can use that. You should drive every route, at least drive it or walk it, so you know exactly what's there, exactly what isn't there. In fact, I did that just the other day, drove a route just to make sure I understood what the terrain looked like, right? And it's important because you need to know what you're, you know, if you're going to move into a conflict space, and here's the case in point, you got kids in school, somebody in the hospital, you know, somebody's in the conflict zone, you need to get in and get out with them. You should have a very good plan for how you're going to do that, which is why we were talking planning last night. And tonight we're talking maps, because you're not just going to plan a route. You have to walk the terrain. And, you know, the military, Dave referenced this last night, we do rock walks, right? Where we lay the terrain out on a floor, and every battalion commander or every company commander will walk through what their concept of operation is for that, that terrain. So everybody else understands what their scheme of maneuver is. And it's very important not only to walk the terrain and see what's out there, but see where the channelized areas are, see where you can be ambushed, see where they can set up roadblocks, see where, you know, the road either narrows or goes into a dead end. Because sometimes maps are not going to show you that, especially a map that's a topographical map. You don't know what you're looking at, and you don't understand the how the map works, you can get into trouble very, very quickly. So, you know, troops done this for 20, 30 years. Some of you haven't done this at all. So there is a couple of books that are available, trying to find it here, that you can use to do some of this. Let's see if I can find them. And the short answer is you're setting yourself up not just for success, but you're exercising this so you and your family, when you start moving, everybody's on the same page. I'll let you guys chime in while I'm looking for these books.
Well, I was going to say something. I just shared some links with us. There's a road atlas like Colorado and all the Western states have that's, I guess Rand McNally owns it now, but it's called the Delarmer Atlas and Gazetteer. And they have topographical road atlases. Like for Colorado, I have one. I have them for Montana and Wyoming. But like, they're $30 and it's like gold. I mean, I learned to use these maps, these atlases, before phones, you know, we had smartphones, and they were invaluable in Colorado for like, if you're stuck on the freeway and there, we have traffic jams in Colorado, just for example. I mean, even when things are going normal, doing this due to snowstorms, where you can be stuck on a pass road for 8 hours. I've seen it, or longer. Where, and that does, that's a whole separate discussion about being prepared to survive in your vehicle. But if you have one of these atlases, you can figure out often in Colorado or in other Western states or anywhere that's got terrain, like, oh, hey, you know, if I get off and I get on this Jeep trail and I drive, you know, half a mile, I can get on this state highway that's two lanes, and I can either bypass the whole traffic jam or I can get out of this situation. And I think having something like that would be invaluable. You know, when you're looking at this idea of a get out of Dodge kind of map, like the strip map, that you're messing up if you don't have one of these atlases for where you live. That's the most effective. And I have saved my ass numerous times just from having one of these maps, atlases, I mean.
Yeah, 100%. Those are the really big books for you guys, like what your grandma and your dad had, and they're invaluable. Yes.
Like each page is like a county. Like they have one county on one or two pages. It'll be like, you know, two huge pages on the map that's got like every gravel road, every Jeep trail. It even has most hiking trails. You know, in the world that we're about to enter, I think this kind of knowledge is essential. And, you know, obviously I would say for your local area, you want to have this knowledge in your head. You know, your strip map should be a backup, for when you get stressed out and you can't remember. But, you know, I think where you immediately live, you need to have familiarity. Like Matt Bracken has said, you know, go walk and know your area in the dark. Anyway.
Steve, no, go ahead, Dave. I was going to read something, then I'll. So I pulled the training circular TC325.26. It's map reading and land navigation. You buy it on Amazon. The link is literally there, and you just click right on it, and that's what we're referencing. So go ahead, Dave.
Government printing office too, like online. If you want, because the one that is on Amazon is like a copy of that, like a not official one, but they're good. But you can also get all of these things off the U.S. printing office. I don't know what the link is. You can post it.
Go ahead, Dave.
All right. Sorry about that. So I wanted to jump in with a couple of comments. The first, and that's an excellent comment Bracken made about doing things in the dark. You can do the same things in the dark that you do in the day, but the time factor changes considerably. The second thing I'd say is, when you drive around in a vehicle, typically in your car or on a bike or just hiking, at ground level, you're only getting a small percentage of what's out there. You get in an aircraft, you look at overhead imagery, you get on Google Earth, some of that stuff, and you may be shocked to find what's around you. You may have things that are a couple of roads removed or behind some tree lines. And from a tactical perspective, they can change the whole ball game. If you're trying to get from point A to point B and you're looking at places where you might be interdicted, there may be structures that can house or hide people, vehicles, other things that you have no awareness on. So try to get the best three-dimensional reconnaissance or map review of your area of operations that you can. That's very important. The other thing I wanted to relate was an experience I had as a mechanized infantry company commander. I had gone to OCS, and by the way, I'm of a vintage where we didn't really have GPSs and things like that. Everything was about land navigation with a map and compass, and if you couldn't do it, you were thrown out of the course, period.
Translation, you're old as fuck.
I'm old as fuck.
Yeah.
But I will say, it's great skills to have because we didn't have anything else. And so when I went from infantry lane training, all the infantry background at the time of the first Gulf War, into armor school, and then became, an armor officer, spent time there, eventually ended up as a mechanized infantry company commander. Because I had the mounted navigation skills of an armor officer, I was kind of in a different world than a lot of my colleagues in the infantry world, because most of those guys were used to, Mark I shoe leather in terms of, foot speed and navigation. So when they looked at a map, they were looking at, a 5 to 8 kilometer grid square on their map. Whereas you get in the mechanized world, you're looking at dozens and dozens of kilometers. And so I had two platoon leaders who were former 82nd Airborne guys who weren't real excited about the fact that I wanted to take them out into some of the maneuver lanes where we were training and teach them about mounted navigation and some of the differences. Well, I can tell you, after a couple of hours, these guys were so turned around and so lost, they couldn't keep up with things. It was all a matter of dimensional change, not just in geography, but also in terms of time. Because things, if you're at foot speed carrying a backpack, you're at one speed. If you're on a bicycle, you're in another speed. If you're in a car or other wheeled vehicle, you're in an entirely different dimension. Things happen, particularly in tactical terms, things happen much, much faster. And so you need to have some shortcuts and be able to switch between scales. In America, our cars are basically, our odometers are miles and tens of miles. You need to be able to convert that to kilometers, because that's what most military grade topo maps are in kilometers. And things like that make a difference, especially if you're pressed for time or, in a tactical environment. So it's not just a matter of getting out. Think about the application in which you'll be using these maps, in which you may be relying on navigation and so on. Day, night, mounted in vehicles, mounted on bicycles, or foot speed. Also, get used to reading terrain contours on your map. We often forget about that. And if you're carrying a backpack and any type of appreciable weight, it greatly afflicts your foot speed in going up and down hills. It's not smooth sailing like it may look on that nice flat map on the, you know, sitting on a picnic table out here.
So just to clarify, a topo map is the relief map where you're looking at the mountains and there's little circles inside circles inside circles. And I'm just bringing it up because some folks don't know what a topo map is.
That's probably a good point.
Yeah, they're 100% essential. If I mean, even if you're in the city, it's helpful because there's roads that go uphill, and even just a couple of degree, you know, grade uphill, you're not going to be able to avoid it. But at least you know, okay, I'm not going to be able to walk this next 10 miles as fast as I walked the last 10 miles, you know, where the road was really flat.
Exactly. And one thing I would point out, Troop, is there are clubs you can get into where you learn orienteering. People have teams and they do competitions and things like that, various parts of the country. I know it's kind of late in the game to look at something like that, but just for future reference, people can realize there are orienteering clubs or competitions that you can get into, which is an excellent way to learn navigation. I would highly encourage people to learn the two popular modes of navigation, one being dead reckoning, where you're literally drawing a line with your compass on a map, and the other, of course, being terrain association. You need to be able to do both of those to be effective because you don't know what the environment's going to hold.
Orienteering's a good ad, Dave. The I just lost my train of thought. Orienteering map reading in clubs is very popular in Europe and not so much in the United States. The difference between orienteering map reading, even their compasses are different, and normal map reading is that they do plan a course that has a lot of complex challenges that you would encounter in the real world. And the maps are very highly calibrated, but the orienteering courses, usually they're timed, like, you know, it's a competition, but right. If you know anybody that's in an orienteering club, that's a great way to meet people. That's a great way to get exercise, and that's a great
sport.
Way. Yeah, it's a fantastic thing. And those guys are like experienced orienteering competitors. I'm telling you that if you took one of those guys and you put them up against anybody on this round table right now, like out in the wild on a topo map, they'd probably smoke us because they're really good at what they do. It's an excellent source to learn from.
Hey, by the way, I want to give a shout out to Spud Hut. Leave it to a Navy, a sub driver to bring up the subject of Ranger beads. Now, you know, forgive me, fellas, because I got into this discussion late, but I just want to bring this up in case we forgot to do it earlier. Something that is absolutely critical is understanding your pace count and understanding pace count at different speeds. You need to go to a football field or something where you've got measured pieces of land, and you need to know your pace count for 100 meters at a normal walking pace and what your pace count is at a jog. That way, you know, you don't get grid lines on the road, and a lot of roads don't have mile markers and things like that. So if you want to keep track of where you are in your route, especially if you're in a remote area, you're going to need to know your exact pace count just to keep on track, especially if you're doing dead reckoning, not terrain association.
And one other thing to add to that too, that, and Bruce, you could chime in on this one, because this is one of those things that's, it will seem weird, but it really does help, is grab an aircraft, you know, an aviation sectional for your area, because a sectional is going to give you a lot of different things. Number one, it's going to tell you where all the power lines are. Number two, it's going to tell you where all the airspace restrictions are. And that won't mean much to you, but the airspace restrictions will tell you a lot about the terrain and about how the area is oriented from both how aircraft are going to be brought in as well as all the different services are available, right? And where I'm really driving with that is, for those of you who have older vehicles, right? If you're in a situation where you're trying to find fuel, one of the things that most people won't think of is aviation fuel. 100 low lead will run. You can run most of the older cars prior to 1980, you'll be able to run 100 low lead in it. And it's before the catalytic converters, right? And you can see all those different local airports, private airports, et cetera, and more importantly, some of the air parks. And you can usually show up, and if you need to, there's probably going to be a barter system set up. So there's a number of different types of maps that you can use. And Dave's comment about dead reckoning, that is gold. If you have the time to figure it out and to figure out how to do dead reckoning, because it's not as easy as it sounds.
Go out and do it at night. Do it at night and do it in adverse weather conditions if you can.
Yeah, it's even harder in an airplane at night. So, but the point of saying that is, you have the time now to do it. Now's the time to do it, because I'll tell you, doing land then, Jesus Christ, rented lips, doing land nav as a lieutenant, as a captain, as a major, even. It's amazing how much proficiency you lose in just a short period of time. And it's a perishable skill that you have to constantly refresh. And let's face it, with GPS and with all the cheats we have now on our cell phones, it's very, very easy to lose that skill. And just for mask, Thunto is basically run by Google. So if you want the CIA to follow wherever the fuck you are, go ahead and buy one of those watches, because it will tell the CIA exactly where you are. And there'll probably be a drone or a missile on your head if you're a high value target. Just throwing that out there.
I've always been a Casio guy. And I remember looking at a lot of the guys at Shark Base when I was in Ramadi that were wearing Sun Tzu gear. But their stuff didn't seem to last as well as the Casio stuff either. Just my experience.
I was, Steve, you made me think, talking about the sectional or aviation maps. It might be useful to have, if you were in an evasion type of scenario, to know to evade areas that are closer to airports that might be used by people using different surveillance, options, airborne options. That might be a useful reason to have a map, aviation map, other than like a road map would have, because a road map would never have that. And I was thinking, Dave, the only time I've ever had to do pace counts was in survival training in the Air Force. And I was thinking about it earlier, but I didn't want to assume that no one had ever heard about it, so I didn't mention it. But we did escape and evasion training doing pace counts, through the woods of Idaho, and it worked. It worked really well. I was actually amazed how well I could navigate as long as I stayed pretty accurate on my pace count math.
Yeah. Well, I'm not an SF guy, but I led lots of different small units when I was a junior officer. And, Steve's right. You use land nav all the time. Every school I went to, it's the first thing they did was tested you on land nav. But, I was also a scout platoon leader when I was in an armor battalion. And I'm sure Troop could appreciate this, but I'm going to make a recommendation. If you have routes where you need to go to rescue grandma or whomever, or if you have routes as a bug out route, you need to withdraw through a certain passage point or a certain area, and there's bridges or other potential obstacles, you need to keep constantly aware of the status of those obstacles. There's times when I've had this experience several different times where things look good on a map, but I get there and quite literally the bridge is under repair and you've got a 5-mile detour. changes your time hack. So stay aware of current conditions. Proof your routes. Proof your routes. It's just like when you come out of an assembly area and you're heading for the LD, you've got to hit a certain passage point or you're going to get into a friendly fire situation, even though you're behind your own lines and should be safe. You need to know exactly where the hell you're going, and you need to be able to do it at night.
And I'll add one more to that, because most people don't or take it for granted is the best way to say it. You've lived in an area so long, you know where all the landmarks are, you know where all the key intersections are, you know where all of the services are. But try doing that at night from a hilltop, looking down on your area. Like, I have several hilltops around me, and I've literally gone out during the day and at night and surveyed the area so I know where my dead reckoning points are. Like, where is the terrain features that I'm going to use, especially at night, to dead reckon? And but where am I going to connect with one of my escape routes, et cetera? And I've walked them both day and night. And the other thing I've done is I've mapped out all the key areas where you can meet people inconspicuously. So if, let's just say, in a martial law situation where you have to bug out of your house because you have a, you know, battalion of this foreign nationals converging on your house, you need to get out of there. You're going to want to go somewhere where you can meet up with other people and have, you know, comms, et cetera. That's part of what this is all about, is knowing exactly how to exfiltrate your area, knowing how to get to certain terrain features and certain rally points. A rally point is basically just a point on the map that you pick where you say, if X happens, then we meet here at X time, you know, and that's where you go to meet, right? If you don't have any comms at all, you pick a rally point. You say, if you lose comms, you lose contact, this is where we meet. So I know I was going somewhere with that. Completely lost my fucking train of thought as usual.
Steve, can I throw a thing in here about land nav that I've learned the hard way? Besides, you know, everything we've already said, one thing, I've been listening to the book that Steve recommended, Deep Survival. And one thing that he talked about in there is that, and as pilots, we learned this early on in our training, is that you have to learn to trust your instruments. And under pressure, when you're lost, you may tend to doubt your compass. You might start thinking, oh, the compass must be broken, whatever. Don't distrust your equipment. Don't distrust your compass. Your compass is going to be better than you.
Trust your map, trust your compass.
Yes. Then the next thing I've learned, if you're truly lost, if you really don't know where you're at, one thing I've learned hunting is, at least in the mountains in the West, and I'm sure it's the same in like Appalachia, is if you find a game trail that's used by animals, that's a decent trail, use it. You're better to use a game trail because the animals know where all the obstacles are. And instead of trying to bebop directly on a compass heading straight across the country, which is probably going to lead you to all kinds of natural obstacles, the animals have already figured it all out. And that's why there's trails that they've created, you know, paths through the mountains or whatever. And chances are, you know, you don't want to go the wrong way, obviously, but generally I've found in the mountains anyway, you're going to be better taking a game trail than wandering around on your own, even if you know where you're going, because you might find there's a huge area of deadfall in the forest where the game trails go around all of that. Or there's an area there's suddenly 200 foot cliffs. The game trails go around all that. And you may not pick it up on your topo map. You may not be able to pay it, you know, see it closely enough, but the animals have already figured that out. So I guess I'm just saying, trust what the animals have already figured out.
I love that.
Very good point.
On the Ranger beads, people are probably looking up Ranger beads right now. I like these. You look them up. I don't know what they're called, but they're like the click counters. And one of them's hanging off of every one of my map cases. It's a thing that counts from 0 to 9,999. They're made by Marathon. I'm sure other people make them, but the ones I like are made by Marathon. And it has just a little lever on it, and you just hit it, click, there's one, click, there's two, click, there's three. And that's a lot nicer than using Ranger beads where you're counting in your head, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, slide a bead, 1, 2, 3, 4, slide a bead. Oh, now, okay, slide the second set of beads. And if you already got your hand on another piece of equipment, like your rifle or a compass or something else, it's the Ranger beads are kind of a pain in the ass. And I mean, they're good, but they kind of are a pain in the ass. So the Marathon clicker thing I'm talking about, I don't know what they're called, but they're things like you might see them if you go to an event and the security can only allow like 1,000 people in the venue. So every time somebody passes through, they click the thing. And then when they get up to 1,000, then they shut the door and, until people leave or whatever. But those clicky things are good for basically being Ranger beads. And then also in a vehicle, when you're counting mile markers, or if you don't see the mile markers, so you got to count time on your watch, which is how I prefer to try to figure out how far I went, is just get a gate. So what they're talking about with Ranger beads is you have to figure out how many steps it takes you to walk 100 yards or a kilometer. So you go out to a flat park and you measure out 100 meters, and then you walk it and you go, okay, my pace count 47 or whatever it is. But you can also walk that same 100 yards just at a gate, and you just don't worry about your steps or whether you did a long step or a short step, but you go, okay, it took me 4.5 minutes to walk a kilometer or whatever. And just get a good idea what the averages are when you're training, because you can walk up a hill, or you could walk in between mile markers, or you could walk on a trail that's turning and winding, which really screws up pace counts. And you're going to have a harder time with that. But if you just use your watch and you know how far you can walk with whatever gear you got, and you could just cut it on flat surface, it takes me this long to walk a kilometer, and on between 0 and 5 degree incline, it takes this long. So that's just a good thing. And you're not going to know any of that unless you're out there doing it, and you know what equipment you're wearing. And in this, in this civilian space, in the peacetime space, you're not going to be carrying a fucking plate carrier and a rifle and all the bullshit, but you are going to hopefully be carrying water on your back, and you can add weight that approximates the weight of the legitimate pack that you would be pulling out of your vehicle if you had to dismount. So I wanted to kind of throw that in there, the using time versus a pace count, and then also having one of those counters, because the counters can also help you do things like calculate speed in a vehicle at night. And like what's it called? A tachyometer. It's really helpful for that too. So if you don't know how fast you're going in a vehicle, but you know that you have defined waypoints like mile markers, you can use that for a lot of information to figure out where you're at on a map.
Troop, can I add something? One thing you guys made me remember as we were talking about this is another thing in the mountains that's useful, not only in terms of pace count, but thinking about how much vertical feet you can climb in an hour or descend in an hour. And when I was younger, I used to use a rule of thumb of like 1,000 feet of vertical per hour, roughly, would be pretty manageable. I don't know if I could do that anymore, but, and there's probably people that, but if you kind of have an idea of what kind of vertical distance you can cover in the mountains, a lot of times that vertical actually becomes a bigger component than the horizontal, and it'll help you kind of ascertain like, hey, if I had to cross a mountain or a hill or a ridge, how long is it going to take me to get up and over. You can just count the thousands of feet vertical that you have to clear, and then have an idea. Another thing I was thinking about the game trails is, all the animals got to eat and they all got to drink. So there's a good chance especially in the hills, if you get on a game trail that's going down, it's going to take you to water probably eventually.
Another good point. And if you really want to be serious about things, have a waterproof bag with you. because water obstacles can be a big problem. And you don't want all your shit wet. You can strip your clothes off if you're under dire circumstances and you got to get from point A to point B and you don't have time to seek a go around, then you may need to conduct what we military call a wet gap crossing. Sounds euphemistic, but basically it's a water obstacle.
Yeah, water sucks. If you watch my Trooper Channel videos, you're always going to see everything that I have in sandwich bags and freezer quart Ziploc bags and gallon bags. And it isn't just bad enough that your stuff's going to get wet, but when your stuff gets dusty and it gets that powdery crap all over it, and then it rains, and then your stuff has pasty, wet crap on it, like, it sucks. So
yeah, but that's why I'm talking about large-scale waterproof bags, that those rubber bags you can get at a military surplus store or online, like we used to have in the military, and you could literally put, you know, most everything you have, including your outer clothes. You know, you can strip down to a pair of shorts if you need to.
Have you guys ever heard that? Oh, sorry. Have you ever heard the Jack London story, to build a fire? That's a good one.
Yeah, there's lots of good training tools out there. You can check YouTube, or you can just, you know, find good books and things like that as well. There's a lot of trade craft and field craft that you know, that you can brush up on. We're a little bit late in the game if things are going to happen, but it's never too late to learn, right?
Yeah, the biggest thing right now is just the basics down. And you're right, there are lots of videos on University of YouTube that'll walk you through land nav, military land navigation, lots of videos out there. And it's just one of those things where right now you're just trying to get proficiency versus mastery. And, you know, we're throwing this at you sequentially because we don't know how this is going to develop. We don't know how bad it's going to be. We don't know how chaotic it's going to be. But at least if we throw all the tools in front of you and you get proficient with a good number of them, and you have other people around you that are proficient with other areas, you're going to have a better chance than trying to figure it out on the go. And most people don't have any paper maps. They just don't. They rely on their phones. And we're giving you the analog solution so you can make the best, you know, you have the best opportunity to move out when other people are going to be stuck. And I guarantee you, if there's a lot of chaos, people will be frozen. Fight, flight, or freeze, right? So you're going to see the fight and the flight, and you're going to see people just stop, full stop. They won't know what to do. And this will give you the opportunity to not only get ahead of the herd, but at least have a good fighting chance to get away from the herd while they're all still trying to figure out what's going on. So the other part of this too, and I'm glad that Colonel Johnson brought it up, is, you know, Lawrence Gonzalez's book talks through a lot of the deep survival situations, right? And marrying that with comms, with maps, and you can get laminated maps from Amazon. You can get street map. In fact, I have a Phoenix street map from Amazon that comes laminated. And I've driven several routes just to see what the terrain looks like. And there's certain parts of the city wide open. In fact, wide streets. There's not a lot of cover and concealment along the route because there's big malls. There's other parts where there's basically strip malls all the way down right next to the road, which gives somebody rooftop advantage, gives them the ability to set up roadblocks, et cetera, et cetera. And having those maps handy to get you out of an urban area will be worth its weight in gold. And then having the Rand McNally map books that show you every city in the country, every rural area in the country, and all the roads, that'll give you a leg up on trying to navigate around when, you know, things are at a bottleneck on the main thoroughfares. I don't know where the hell I was going with that. I was going somewhere with it.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say real quick, Vasily made comments in a live chat about Magic Earth and some GPS sources for digital elevation models and, you know, GIS geography, stuff like that. that you could upload and have, and you don't, you know, if the internet goes down, you've already got it. You don't, you're not relying on something else. The only thing I would caution people on with GPS systems is you got to make sure you got the batteries, backup batteries. You need power.
100% on. Well, solar is good, right? Solar and solar generators and LiFePO4 batteries and all that. I'm with you. I was a child of the 80s, and we had to learn how to read maps the hard way. And the only way we knew how, right, with a compass. And then the other thing is, like, military aircraft, they're taking the top row of windows out of them now. They're not even building new military aircraft with the top row of windows. And those top row of windows were designed for the astral navigation. So there's such a dependency on technology. It's really frightening because, like, just this week, a Boeing satellite just exploded, just blew up, put debris all over everywhere, right? So there's going to be pachinko balls. And I've been saying for years, once the Chinese successfully tested their ability to launch anti-satellite missiles, and they did it with impunity. And it was, I think, around 2003. I'm not sure exactly when, but they shot one of their own satellites out of I don't know if it was geosynchronous orbit or where it was, but it was pretty high up in there. And then that caused a massive debris field. Their NORAD and other countries track all the space junk that's, like, larger than the size of a baseball bat or a baseball. Because those debris are flying at 20,000 miles an hour, and they're just going out, flying through, trying to run into stuff. And if we go kinetic, if we go into World War III, I guarantee you there is not going to be a whole lot of GPS coverage. The second part of that is it was President Clinton who allowed GPSs to be as accurate as they are now. It was, like, one of the only cool things that he did, and they can turn that off just as quickly as they turned it on. And what I mean by that is the fidelity of your phone telling you what your position is based on GPS inputs. Prior to the Clinton decision, it only needed to be within, like, 100 meters, and now it's super precision. Technology has gone forward since then. Land surveyors mainly have very super high precision, like within a millimeter probably, accuracy, so that they could drop pins and do what they need to do for land surveying. There's also other systems on Earth that are highly calibrated that put out radio signals that will help military and land surveyor and other technologies get a location fix in certain areas, even if there isn't a satellite network. But your average, Joe Blow downloaded from the shit fairy civilian doesn't have access to those other secondary methods of triangulation. So absolutely, you need a map. And just at the low level, because Steve said, make sure we keep this at a low level, right? So at a low level, you need one of those big Rand McNally. There's another big company that makes them too, but those big road atlases. And if you have grandma that lives in an assisted living home up the street, depending on what the emergency is, if it's a civil unrest type of emergency, that's going to be different from a weather disaster emergency. You may need to extract grandma, or grandma might be safer where she's at than you trying to go get her. But if grandma or whoever you love is 65 miles away, and your evacuation is south, and that person that you love is north, you're going to have to figure out right now who you can save and who you can't save. Because if you have two kids at home, or your husband or wife or whoever it is, it's immediately within your control, and you have a guaranteed egress strategy to get out of a conflict space safely, and you have to drive a 100-mile round trip out of your way through a conflict space to go get somebody else, and then go an additional, 50 to 100 miles back the direction you came from, you're going to have some hard choices to make. And this is where having a communication plan, this is why, I always said, like, Steve and others have said, you put a lot of stuff out there, in the open internet, as far as, like my water and stuff. I don't worry about people attacking my home, because I'm going to have 13 people here that I personally trained who are going to be helping me protect my home. But your crew or whoever that is that's on your team, or maybe you're going to go to somebody else's house and they're going to be the sanctuary that you go to, they have a guest list. And either you're on that guest list or you're not. Meaning that my son's dipshit fucking girlfriend, she's not on the guest list, right? She's not coming over. She needs to figure out what family member that she has is going to take her in. And when you use these maps to evacuate your area, which is what their purpose is, or to coordinate with other people so that you could meet at certain predefined waypoints, which is what Colonel Murray's talking about, there's different reasons to use them. You have to know who is within your area, who you can rendezvous with, and who is outside of your area, or who is, you know, so far removed that you guys are just separate entities, and you're not even going to bother to do anything. Maybe you can communicate with each other over an HF radio, but you're not going to try to go out of your way to save people that are going to guarantee the death of you and the people that you can save who are in your immediate control. And it's extremely important that you know that now, and that the people that you care about know that now. Grandma, shit might hit the fan and I'm not going to be able to save you. So I want to help you develop relationships within your local community that are going to assure your survival, because we're not going to be able to come and get you. Those are the types of conversations you need to have on those Rand McNally net maps, you know, just atop the road maps. Basically, there isn't going to be GPS signal. There isn't going to be satellite service. There isn't going to be XM radio. There isn't going to be all that other stuff that you're used to. So just having that roadmap, that big Rand McNally roadmap, they have them, they put all 50 states in, they have all the major intersections and all the side roads. Have that in your car. A compass is secondary, because when you're on a roadway, it tells you if you're driving north, south, east, or west, right? So you should have a compass, but get the big road book first, a big atlas, and then understand, if you're going 120 miles away to your cabin, or you're going to drive from one state to another, what are the alternate routes? If you're on I-40 and it's down, are there other alternate routes to your destination? And take a weekend and drive those alternate routes just to get a feel for them, just to understand them. And at that very, very basic level, you will have improved your survival chances by like 5,000%. You don't have to learn counts. You don't have to learn dead reckoning. You don't have to learn all the stuff we're talking about. Just get the Rand McNally map, test the route, tell the people that you can't get to, that you're not going to get to them, and then train that route. Have you know, at least three ways to get to your objective. And if you do those things, you're going to have a much higher probability of survival.
Troop, I was going to add something. Okay. I thought of what you. Oh, sorry, Steve. You know, just looking down the road, you know, for what the various futures we could imagine. And if you look at a lot of people here have read Bracken's books, and Bracken kind of gets into this in his original series, is the idea that, you know, Troop mentioned going across state lines, and it could become significant. State lines could become a significant barrier, depending which way things happen in our country and who controls which state and which border. And so one thing I've been trying to think about is, like, you know, what are the avenues that if they're trying to control people from leaving one state to the other, you know, where are they going to be trying to block traffic? And I think because of that, you need to be thinking also, like, I need to have a non-main highway plan to get out of wherever I'm trying to get out of, because you know, the freeways are going to be the first thing that they'll try to latch, you know, lock down control on. And you're going to probably end up on rural roads, gravel roads, jeep trails, whatever, if you're trying to move without any impedance, depending on the kind of uncertainty we experience anyway.
Okay, we're coming up on hour and a half. Let's, this is a good place to wrap it up. Let's do some closing comments. Who wants to start? Good chat.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Good chat.
I just spoke. I don't really have a closing comment right now. I think, you know, we're seeing all the increasing craziness in the world. It does seem like it's kind of at a lull right now, but anyone who's been listening to InfoWars or any of the other various alternative news sites, it's got to be aware of, the chance that, that the, cabal is going to try to make life miserable for all of us. So I think just continue preparing, like Steve said in the sitter up on Monday, you know, doing the things, you know, think about, hey, if the shit's going to hit the fan tomorrow, what would I do right now? You know, if I have another day to work on, you know, what would I do? Getting your priorities. And like for me, the biggest thing in the mountains in Colorado that I'm focusing on is firewood, because I anticipate, you know, any chaos that we have, it's very likely that the grid's going to go down at least for some period. And so firewood will be essential to me for keeping my house livable. So that is my, I've already got a fair amount of other things, you know, set up. And my biggest priority right now is firewood, having as much firewood as I can. And another thing, if you imagine a world that like Bracken describes, you know, it may become exponentially harder to get firewood in the future, even in the next year or the year after that. So having as much firewood, if you live in a cold area, as possible, could be something that is important for years, not just right now. So that would be my takeaway.
Troop
fell off. He's requesting you let him back in. His phone screwed up.
Hang on. I need to clear up the spammer that's in the channel.
I love it when you have a brilliant thought and then you press the wrong button on your phone. So I'm back. Everybody that is listening. All right. When you're listening to this right now in the audience and you're really thinking, holy fuck, I don't know what half the stuff was that these guys said, or you're thinking, I eat crayons and nails for breakfast, hoorah, but just focus on the basics. And really the whole point of this is to give you an insight into the capability of these analog methods and capabilities of understanding where you live, what is around you, ways that you can get in and out of where you live, because you might be outside of the area of where you live trying to get home where your family is. And it's going to be equally important in reverse to know, wow, we just had a huge windstorm and traffic's really jacked up right now. I don't know what's going on. Phones are down. Can't get a hold of anybody. I know that big oak tree is hanging over that main road again in my neighborhood. I'm just going to go ahead and preemptively just take that back road in. So just having the, you know, a little bit of a common sense on that and just start with the basic roadmap. Stop trusting your technology. The technology is not there for you to maintain a higher level of control over your situation. That technology is there to control you. And when they want you to lose control, they're going to take that technology away. And when those satellites stop working, if you do not understand how to navigate the world around you, you're going to be in trouble. And so something just as simple as a paper map. One of the things that Steve and I are going to do, and I recommend you guys do this too, before it gets too snowy, is figure out a place north and south of you on your main road. Like for us, it's Interstate 17. It might be I-40 or wherever. And drive every single exit. So, you know, between here and Flagstaff, there's probably 60 exits that you can get off of I-17 and you can go east or west. Do an aerial map assessment on Google, so that you can already take the no-go ones. So you go, oh, there's no way we would ever get off of that exit. That's the dead end. That's useless. There's no reason to ever think about getting off on that exit. And you'll bring that down. You'll filter it down to, let's say, 20 exits between you and grandma's house or wherever it is you think you need to go. And then pull off the freeway and go east or west on those exits and see if there's a place you can camp for the night. You know, maybe there's a other resources there, but mainly a place that you can hold up. So if you end up getting stuck in a major traffic jam, you know that you just got to tough it out. Even if you have to illegally drive outside the lane, you know, you can tough it out for, you know, the next 5 miles and then just go ahead and get off of that known cleared exit and just make some beans and bacon, you know, make a cup of coffee, grab the wool blanket and tough it out. And then the next morning when that freeway is clear, you get back on the road again. So that's what I'm going to close with is, you know, the whole purpose of this is to understand not only how to leave your home to go to a safe place, but how to get back to your home from somewhere else by understanding what is around you. And your best tools for the newbies is Google Maps. Just, you know, punch in your address, print out, you know, the four streetlights in every direction, and just get a route map. Just do that. And then you can spend all the money on ranger beads and laminated maps and compasses and shit later. Thank you, Tea Tree Girl. She's putting a bunch of links in the chat for the compasses and stuff that I use if you want to buy stuff from the shit fairy. But just focus on the purpose of this is understanding how to get people safely to your home that you want to have at your home, how you can get back at your home through more than two or three different methods, and how to get out of your home and out of your area to somewhere safe by two or three different routes. That's the only thing I'm hoping everybody will get out of this. And then do that this weekend that's coming up. You got nothing going on, do this while it's fresh in your mind. Out.
Dave.
Okay. I'm going to be somewhat practical in my comments here for closing. A couple of thoughts occur. Number one, we talk about being prepared to defend ourselves. We also talk about having sources of food and whatnot and what's going on in terms of attacks on food processing plants. So first recommendation, have a good 22 caliber rifle that is scoped. You can hunt small game. If you live in the northeast part of the country where there's white-tailed deer, I mean, I've been a deer hunter all my life. I could survive on deer. The problem is the deer population won't last very long. Big game like that will go away fairly quickly in a starving population. My recommendation for the 22 caliber rifle is this: squirrels, rabbits, small game. Usually, if you have any sense of hunting whatsoever, you can find some of that, and you could feed yourself and a small family on that. You may want to look up how to prepare, what to do with that on YouTube, but it's a very good source when other major sources of food go away. Next recommendation I'm going to have is something I think Troop talked about for just a second, but I want to buttress that. You know, technology is a great thing, and we can face challenges much more easily in daylight than at night. But celestial navigation, just basic fundamentals of celestial navigation, is a great skill to have. Understand just as the very fundamental point of how to find the North Star and where North is. If you don't have a compass and you're out in daylight, if you understand what latitude you're at, you can usually look at the position of the sun in the sky, if you spend any time at all outside, understand what time of the day it is, and understand which direction. If you watch the sun move for 15 or 20 minutes in the sky, get a sense of which direction is north, and relate that back to, you know, where you are on the continent. You can kind of figure that stuff out. Lastly, I want to recommend looking at a timetable. We talked last night about planning a bit, and I think Troop had a good comment, excellent comment, about prioritizing things, because in an emergency situation, you're not going to be able to save everybody. But, and I've talked about these decision points in the past when I talk about the deep state and their detailed planning, we need to have decision points too. It's a good idea to sit down with family members. I know my wife and I are going to do this in some detail. Start to talk about what events may transpire, what the different decision points would be. If A leads to B, do we need to stay? Do we need to go? Do we need to go and get the in-laws? If B leads to C, same kind of questions. You can figure, so in other words, learn to navigate the timeline, not just the geography. If you plan ahead, if you understand that there could be certain indicators or triggering events, you may need to have a plan to go out and get grandma, bring her over, set her up in a spare bedroom, and then if shit does really hit the fan, you're not faced with that terrible decision of, can I get grandma, or is that going to put the rest of the family at threat? Preempt that decision, plan ahead. That's my Dave, 2 cents.
Can I ask you a question on that?
Fire away.
Because I think that's a good one. The last point you made, and like one thing I've been working on in my head is, there's that, what's that Air Force survival instructor guy has written a couple different survival books, Hollerman. He's made the point that in two of his books that the first 3 days is essential. Like if you're going to move, the time to move is in the first 3 days from a major event. After that, things get very hard because people start to figure out the situation and realize it's going to be longer lasting. And then it gets much harder because people are going to all start trying to grab resources from anybody they can. But one thing I've used, and I'm asking everybody here, but like, you know, my logic has been, for example, as a pilot, if I hear of one nuke detonated in the world in anger, other than some isolated incident, but if it's between any of the major powers, for me, that would be like an immediate bug out if you're, you know, having family members you need to get, because things could escalate quite quickly. And it, you know, it might only be hours or a day or two till things get a lot worse. I've also kind of used that threshold in my mind for, you know, if I hear of a nuke going off in anger between the US and anyone, I'm not leaving home. You know, I'm not going to work. And I think, you know, I'm curious what you guys think would be significant milestones that would generate that kind of change in your mind. Cause I'm open to suggestions. That's just one thing I've come up with.
Well, so good question. And in fact, let me add one more consideration for people. I live in an area that is suburban. It's not wealthy, but it's reasonably affluent. And the word on the street is basically that there are not one, but multiple hotels that are housing illegal immigrants. One of the things I need to do is figure out the best way, and I'm thinking perhaps talking to cleaning staff, because front desk people don't like to ask, don't like to answer questions. But I'd like to try and get a handle on how many illegal immigrants are actually in my area of operations. And so I'm going to have to think outside of the box a little bit and get some good intel gathering techniques, but gain an idea of that. So Bruce, what you're talking about, there's different stimuli, different provocations drive different responses. Now you mentioned a nuclear detonation. I mean, that's a hell of a provocation, right? That's more than just an indicator.
Right.
So,
but if it hit DC, we could forgive, though. I think we could move forward.
we can congratulate each other, right?
Somehow I knew that was coming. I was just waiting for it.
But what I'm saying is, I don't want to lose my train of thought here. What I'm saying is, we need to look at each of these indicators, and we may have different responses. As an example, in my state, I happen to have gone to college at a place where they keep a lot of state records. And I'm in a northeastern state. That's about as narrow as I want to get with where I'm located. But those state records are secured in a location that is thought to be less affected by nuclear strikes. And so if I find out, if I've got indications that there's going to be some type of immigrant uprising and staying at my house is just not tenable, then I'm going to bug out in one direction. If I find out that there's a nuclear detonation, I have talked to my wife and I said, okay, we need to head north because that's a completely different situation and it's a different threat. So you've got to kind of go down the checklist and figure out what's the appropriate response for each one of these provocations. And some of those things are going to be specific to your geography and your location. So, I mean, that's the best thing I can say is you're just going to have to take the different data points and put them on a map and figure out your best solution.
This would be a great question to have Joel Skousen on and talk to him about, I think.
Yeah. Well, the immigrant threat is one thing. A nuclear exchange would be another thing. Understanding that civil authorities are going door to door to collect firearms is another thing. I mean, you can go on and on and on. We're running out of food and the water has stopped. There's no electricity. There's been an EMP. We've talked about all these kinds of things in the past in one form or another. We just have to be creative and review some of these things.
So just to close with everybody, a strip map is not a route that you hand your designated driver to find all the topless cabarets during your weekend bar crawl. Okay, that's not what we're talking about.
Oh, I thought that's what your primary use for it was, Troop.
That, well, in peacetime, yes.
I think you just went from being an optimist to a pessimist.
Well, if the nukes are inbound, I'm going to open up my best bottle of scotch and play Naked Twister with my wife. So that's my plan.
Okay. On that note, I'm going to try and forget that visual that's in my head right now. That's,
too much information.
Yes, which is like it's sketchy as fuck. So the troop, you're the only guy I know that can throw off everything I was thinking at a moment's notice with a really, really horrid visual. Thank you for that.
And this is one of the many tools in my Swiss multi-tool skill set is completely blowing up a serious conversation.
Yes, thank you. So I'm just going to close with this. You need to get proficient with paper maps. Have some paper maps on hand. You can buy some maps, laminated maps through Amazon. You can download, and we didn't talk MGRS maps. The reason why we're not talking those grid maps is most people don't understand how to use them anyway. And we're trying to keep this at a high level so everybody can at least get something out of this. So start with roadmaps, city maps, map books, and then work your way up as you get more proficient. And there's tons and tons and tons of videos on this on YouTube. Leverage those while you can. The last thing I'll say is, if you haven't bought extra food, now's the time. Finish your preps now before the 5th. Wait, we don't know what's going to happen after the 5th, but don't take any chances. And be ready for anything. I can't say that enough. Be ready for anything. And with that, I'll be back Monday with the sit rep. And unless there's anything that blows up, if something blows up, we'll do a roundtable in lieu of that. We'll see y'all next week. God bless. One team, one fight.
Hooah.
Hooah. Hooah.